Less than 10 years ago, tourists from China visiting the California Central Coast were a blip on the screen. Today, China is the number two inbound demographic, close behind Canada, Mexico, and the UK. And within two or three years, it's anticipated that visitors from China will take over the number one spot. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join Chuck Davison, president and CEO of Visit San Luis Obispo County, for an informative conversation about the explosive growth and distinctive cultural dynamics and needs of visitors from China. Davison also talks about the commencement of daily flights between San Luis Obispo and Seattle this spring, as well as a growing demand for a regional conference center. You and I were both at a meeting with Visit California, inbound Chinese tourism, a hugely growing demographic. And I experience it myself. I walk the dogs down the waterfront in Embarcadero, and I've done it for years. It's palpable in the last year or two, the number of Chinese inbound tourists that I see walking around Morro Bay.
You know, Highway 1 is such a major attraction, you know, for people domestically, but also internationally, and the Chinese tourists love Highway 1. So, yes, we had this Global Ready China seminar where our partners at Visit California, our state tourism marketing organization, along with UnionPay, which is the financial piece in China.
Like a Visa.
Yeah, so similar to Visa or MasterCard. You know, they were here presenting on how our destination can become more China-ready and really not only attract, but do a better job of facilitating and creating a great guest experience for those Chinese tourists coming here.
And the inbound Chinese demographic has evolved and shifted even in the last 5, 7, 10 years. It used to be the big tour bus, right? And that's not so much the operative anymore.
Yeah, which is fortunate for us because we're not really a big tourist bus market. We don't have big hotels that can facilitate those types of groups. So it's nice that it has moved to this free individual or traveler model where people, you know, their second trip back to the United States, they want to get out of the big gateways and they want to see something different. And that's that customer for the most part that you're seeing on the Embarcadero in Morro Bay.
So they're very much very adventurous travelers and not knowing the language or the culture and yet ready to head out and self-drive.
They are, and I will say, you know, they do a much better job than we as Americans have a tendency to do outside of our comfort zone. A lot of these Chinese, especially the millennials or the Gen Y, they understand a good amount of English, and they speak some broken English, different than us. I was in China earlier this year. I don't do a good job outside of maybe a dozen words in Chinese or in Mandarin. And so, you know, they are extremely adventurous, and they want to see new and unique experiences. And they travel for a different reason than we travel.
What do they want to see? What do they do?
Yeah, so, you know, Chinese today travel different than us who we want to go and experience something. They travel for status. So much of it is about being able to go back and tell people where they live. I went here. I did this. And it raises them inside of their cultural status. And so for them, they're trying to get here and see new, unique, and different things. They obviously love Hearst Castle. That's a staple for us in the county. But we're seeing more and more of them wanting to get out to the outdoor space to learn about the food and wine culture, to learn about our arts component here in the county, and that's what really makes it exciting for us.
I know for a fact that the Chinese absolutely love wine.
They do love wine. I can tell you after spending, you know, a good amount of time in China this year that it's an education component for them. In China, it's called gambei, which for us would be shooting maybe a shot of hard alcohol. They do that with wine. As they begin to learn more and more about the art of drinking wine, they become more educated and start to drink it the right way.
Learn how to sip.
Yes.
You were telling me earlier they have an affinity for red wine. That's interesting.
Yeah, they do. It is interesting, you know, even with the way, you know, we drink water versus them. Traditionally, we like our water cold or at least, you know, room temperature or chilled. For them, they want their water room temperature or hot. So it's just a different palate based on the market, but they are definitely attracted to the red wine product. Traditionally, it's driven by the tannins in the wine, and they like that type of taste.
The statistics say that this inbound demographic from China is growing and will continue to grow dramatically.
So we subscribe to what's called Visa View. It's the Visa credit card tracking data for what happens in the county. We buy into this and we get quarterly reports and an annual report. At the end of 2015, the 2015 report for Visa credit card only showed about 16,500 Chinese customers coming into the market from China.
San Luis Obispo County.
San Luis Obispo County. They spent about $3 million in spend. This is Visa only. They were third behind Canada and the UK. In Q1 Q2 of this year, they've already now become tied for number one with Canada. And it's expected that China will become the biggest, it's already the biggest overseas market, but it will become the biggest inbound market into California in the next 3 to 4 years.
Wow, number one.
Surpassing Mexico and Canada, which nobody ever would have thought 5 years ago.
Back in the day, Great Britain and Germany were strong players. I used to always bump into German tourists, and I don't see them as much. Is this because of the exchange rate of the euro?
I think it is. We still have a really big base of UK customers that travel here, but we have seen both Canadian and UK business slip a little bit because of the exchange rate. It's much more expensive for them to travel here today than it was a handful of years ago.
Interesting. Going forward, what are the shifts like hospitality industry is making or planning to do to accommodate and be Chinese friendly as far as even signage?
Yeah, there's a couple big components. And for us, it's really taking the lead to help educate our constituents, our lodging and retail and restaurant partners. We can't do it. We don't own the brick and mortar. But it's really helping them understand what they can do to take advantage of all of this business segment. And it's simple things like, A, how you greet that customer. The Chinese are very relationship oriented. Again, much different than we are here in the United States. So there's an understanding of how you would welcome a Chinese customer into your establishment. But it's also simple things like being prepared with information that they're going to want to access. So where is the local Chinese restaurant and how do they get the information that they need to be able to navigate our county and things like that?
Obviously, you're recommending to hoteliers and whatnot that they generate some collateral that's printed in Chinese, giving them some directions and some welcome and whatnot. Tell us about that dynamic.
Yeah, and at a minimum, even if it's not printed collateral, having that collateral available electronically. So, you know, it's amazing for us. You know, the world has definitely moved in the technology spectrum over the last 20 years. Everybody's carrying some sort of handheld device that allows them to access the internet, and the Chinese are steps ahead of us in this space. So even if they don't have a handheld printed piece of material, the ability to have that in digital format where that Chinese customer can take that and use that to their advantage is extremely important. One of the things we're doing is developing a list of companies that can help with that translation so that our local hotel and restaurant partners don't have to go out and find those companies on their own. We can be a source for how they accomplish that.
And then there's also that cultural dynamic, that cultural sensitivity and awareness, whether you printed something in black and white or yellow and red makes a big difference. Tell us about those nuances.
Yeah, it does. You know, it's interesting that in our culture, when you look at financials, red means negative and green means positive. And it's the exact opposite in China. When you look at their stock market, red is a positive number and green is a negative number. And so knowing those simple things, understanding the vast dialects that there are in the Chinese culture is the difference between calling somebody a mom and a horse. And, you know, those things become extremely difficult.
And they're both mom.
They are. And so, you know, those challenges for us as Americans, again, because we're not as culturally adapt as, you know, other countries are. We believe that the world revolves around us sometimes, and it doesn't necessarily do so.
And even more subtle and more basic has to do with numbers. I remember I was spending time in Hong Kong, and the license plate number 888888 came up, and some guy bid 250,000 Hong Kong dollars to get that license plate.
Yeah, again, it's so much different for them because so many things are based on luck or demand or those things. And we don't traditionally as Americans live our life that way, but they are super sensitive culturally to those items. And that's where we as Americans need, if we want to welcome them in, we have to at least have a general or basis understanding. So as an organization, we're trying to prepare that information in small fashion, you know, 1 and 2 sheet pieces of paper that our local partners here in the county can use to help them better facilitate their business.
Back to numbers. What's the bummer number?
There's a couple. 40 is a number that, you know, is completely out of their realm, right? They don't want to see that at all. For us, traditionally, 7 is considered a good luck number. In Asia, it is not. And so, you know, there's so many different components for them that we don't traditionally think of.
And somebody said number 4 is a bummer number, too.
It is. And so, you know, it's really being aware of those things. I think one of the things that's important to note is their millennial generation is starting to shift from that. You heard one of the things today that we practice practice all the time in business, and that is when you hand a Chinese business partner an item or a business card or something like that, you do it with two hands. You do it in a presentation format. I can tell you that we've had millennial Chinese customers in market for a familiarization tour to get them familiar with the county, and they've flipped their card to us across the table because they're moving more in the American fashion. And I think there's some concern for that in China because this is history for them.
Losing those cultural mores. It follows that some classes in Mandarin would be highly recommended continuing ed at Cal Poly, right?
It would. I can tell you, my four daughters, we live in South County, and my oldest daughter's now in school at Royal Grande High School, and they pulled their Mandarin program, which is, for me, you know, problematic because this is the way that our country is moving. It's a huge opportunity to be able to do business.
And an opportunity for young kids graduating from Cal Poly. If they were fluent, even basic Mandarin, it could be a job maker.
Absolutely. I think nobody saw coming, or at least most people didn't see coming 10 years ago, the way the Chinese market has moved. So if we think about it 10, 20 years from now, what's that going to look like? And the ability to communicate in that type of a dialect and that type of a response is going to be hugely beneficial to anybody who has that. So for us at Visit San Luis Obispo County, we've really started to move into these international markets. One of our goals is to do for our local constituents what they can't do for themselves. And so we have, you know, local tourism groups like the city of Pismo Beach or the city of San Luis Obispo, and they're marketing in this kind of 3.5 hour demographic. Our goal is to get outside of that space and really bring new customers. Domestically, we did that with just helping develop this new Alaska Airlines flight to Seattle that starts in April. We're putting hundreds of thousands of dollars behind that flight and into the market to get that off the ground. But when we talk about international business, it's a big focus for us too. We have a representation contract in the United Kingdom with a company called Black Diamond who does our travel trade and our PR efforts on the ground there. And now we're moving into China. Myself and our director of travel trade, Michael Wombolt, were both in China earlier this year on separate trips. Again, it's a relationship-oriented country, so trying to establish those early relationships with travel, tourism companies that can help bring and facilitate business to our county. And there's an amazing opportunity for us with all of the international business that comes into the gateways of San Francisco and Los Angeles to find a way to get those people out of those big cities and into destinations like this that they can experience.
There is that second leg of the process. It's like I told you, coming back from Chengdu, it was a direct flight right to San Francisco. But it would have cost me twice as much for the airfare from San Luis to the airport and back than it did round trip to Chengdu, China. So that's a problem we need to sort out.
As most business people know, it's a supply and demand problem. And so right now, there's a lot of demand to fly out of San Luis Obispo or into it. And because there's not enough flights, that allows the price to escalate. And so what we're working hard for with Kevin and the team at the airport and Mike at the EBC is how we can extend our reach as partners, how we can pool together to build a better widget. And in that model, it's really trying to find new direct air service that will help force those prices down. San Luis Obispo Airport is the sixth most expensive airport on the West Coast.
I know that for a fact. It's painful.
It is. To your point, when you can go to China, I was in Chicago earlier last week for meetings with United Airlines on another new flight that we're working on that I can't get into right now, but it cost me $500 to go to Chicago, and you flew from China for $500.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that picture?
And it was $900 round trip late booking to get from San Luis Obispo to SFO and back. I didn't do it.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's something that we're definitely working towards. The airport's doing an amazing job, as you probably have seen. You know, the new terminal is going up, and we're excited to have that open, and that's really going to help.
And Alaska Airlines, that will help, correct?
Alaska Airlines is going to be great. So direct nonstop service to Seattle starting in April, one flight a day, both directions. Our goal is to extend that into multiple flights a day after we can prove the model, but that's definitely going to help. Now our goal is to get some service headed eastbound. We're doing well getting up and down the coast. We need more flights up and down the coast, but we need to get east.
Yeah, that's me. I go to the Midwest and Southeast and North, upper Midwest often. It's an arduous journey. Phoenix and then Dallas and then Chicago and then on.
Yeah, last week going to Chicago, it took me 12 hours. Coming home this past weekend, it took me 12 hours to Chicago. I mean, we're not going to get a customer for a 3-day weekend when it takes 24 hours to travel there and back.
Right. But that might change.
It's absolutely going to change. It's something that we as an organization are focused on. And again, it's under that auspice of doing for our partners what they can't do for themselves. None of the local cities are going to go champion that effort. They've got other more important things they're working on. And so we're trying to partner with the EVC from a business community standpoint. The airport obviously is the facility and us as the tourism district.
And for the listener, the Economic Vitality Corporation, which is another NGO, correct?
Yeah. And so they're focused on how to help local business be sustainable and grow here in this market. And Mike Manchek, who's the president over there, does an amazing job. We work very closely with him and Kevin out at the airport. And there's great opportunity. Even in our meetings with United last week, they see the opportunity for San Luis Obispo. And they see that it's an expensive market, and that's attractive to them because they know that people are willing to spend money to come here.
Or to leave.
Yes. Yeah. In our goal, getting them here, in the airport's job, getting them out. So
it seems that one missing ingredient in the Central Coast, I know in Morro Bay, there are no big magnet conference centers that I know of.
Yeah, we really look at the conference space as a big opportunity here. Michael Wombolt, who's our director of travel trade, spent a lot of time in the meeting and conference space. He just got back from a show up in Sacramento this past week, and it's really a big opportunity for us. The largest space in our county is 460 seats for dinner at the Embassy Suites, and we're constantly seeing RFPs for 500, 1,000, and that's midweek shoulder season business that there's really no other way to fulfill.
Going forward, what's the hope and what's the dream?
Yeah, our board just last month approved as part of our strategic plan the finalization of a conference center feasibility study. And so we're going to look at a countywide conference center and whether or not there's enough demand for that here for it to be built. And if it would be built, what's the most likely areas where that could occur? They're going to look at five different communities. And so it's a great way to kind of understand holistically as a county where that opportunity might exist.
Would it be a freestanding destination structure itself, or would it be connected with a resort or a hotel?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's part of the component of what the study will show. I mean, in any conference center that is built, it's going to have to be surrounded by hotels. They've got to be facilitated by people, you know, in where they can stay. When we talk about a conference facility, we're not talking about Chicago and Las Vegas and San Antonio and places like that. We're talking about a facility that maybe seats, and the demand will show what it needs to be, but maybe up to 1,500 people.
Obviously, to be an economic viable model, it would have to be multi-purpose, even local high school graduation parties or whatever, right?
Yeah, so there's a whole assortment of ways that facility could be used, from, you know, general meetings and conferences to small incentive packages to, your point, you know, local events that take place there to vent components that get built out in grand halls and things like that. It's really the ability for us to find a way to solve for this midweek business that we have a gap on in our county. And part of the concern is with the closure of the Diablo plant, we're going to lose some more midweek business. Sometimes I don't think people realize that many of the people that come to service that plant stay in our hotels and in our tourism destinations long term, or at least for 2-3 months at a time. We need to find a way to backfill that information. This is one way where at least we want to go through the study process to see if the demand is there.
And some buy-in and support.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important, you know, our board is made up of 14 lodging constituents, hoteliers, bed and breakfast, vacation rentals, and RV parks. And from their aspect, you know, this is a space where they really think that we have an opportunity. We see the demand there in the markets that we work in. Now we have to prove the demand. So we're actually engaging a company called B&D. They did the feasibility study back in 2013 for Cal Poly. Cal Poly, you may remember, was looking to build a hotel, a conference center, and an event center all on campus. The demand was shown in the study, but the cost was prohibitive to them building it, from what I understand. And so we're using the same company that has a general understanding of the area. We're really excited. It's going to take about 4 months to work through that process, but we hope by the time we turn the end of Q1 17 that we'll have some information back.
Chuck Davison, president of Visit San Luis Obispo County. What a pleasure to meet you and visit with you.
Yeah, it's been great spending time with you today. Thanks again for coming to the China Ready seminar and getting a better understanding of what we're doing, and for your input back on your China trip is all helpful. So appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today.
That was fascinating. For further information,
visit sanluisobispocounty.com.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from San Luis Obispo, California.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com. Our associate producers include Melissa Corbin reporting from Tennessee, Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, and Steve Cook contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.